You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. When you hydrate with Liquid IV, you're powered by HydraScience. HydraScience is Liquid IV's science-backed formula with an optimized ratio of electrolytes, vitamins, and nutrients. Experience great-tasting hydration for mental clarity, physical endurance, and overall well-being. Sip into something that up-levels every moment. Liquid IV. Tear. Pour. Live more. Visit us at liquidiv.com.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Do you guys have a show that you liked that then a lot of people started liking and you're like, eh? Because I think I'm starting to get there with The Office. I really liked it when it was on. Yes. And now it's just, I don't know, maybe I need a little break and I can come back and I'll appreciate it again. But I'm just kind of like a little too much with The Office right now.
Billy, I have thought about this a lot because The Office is objectively one of the funniest shows of the last two decades. But I think it became so popular that we were just inundated with Office quotes and GIFs and memes constantly for years. And so it just became too much. And I think a lot of people made The Office their personality for a while. And so it just became kind of like, all right, like I love The Office. It's a great show, but this is just a little bit too much Office for me. Not taking away anything from The Office, but it's almost too loved.
The crazy thing, though, is that like it's happened after it was off the air, I think, right? Because like when I was watching it live and it didn't have this same like cultural impact. It didn't feel like it's like afterwards because of streaming and stuff. And now it's like so beloved and it's so everywhere that it's like I need a little bit of a break from The Office.
Well, that's exactly right. It was when it became really popular on Netflix. All of a sudden, people were binge watching episodes, and it was such an easy show to watch because the episodes are short. They're like 21 minutes. And I think people just watched it and then rewatched it. And it's a show that you can rewatch 100 times, and it's still funny. You catch jokes that you didn't hear the first time, or you know, see an inside joke that you didn't latch on to the first time around. And so it's a great show to watch streaming. It's a lot harder to watch shows week to week. Like I can't even, like Dave right now, there's still two episodes left. I'm like, I don't know when it's going to come out. I almost wish I didn't start the second season until it was all out. It's just harder. So The Office was one of those first shows where it was all there on Netflix and you could just watch it for days.
I haven't watched Dave at all just because of that. Like I want to just be able to watch them all back to back. So I've been waiting to start watching this season.
It's pretty good. Still two episodes left though. But when do they come out? I don't even know. I tried watching one last night. Apparently it's not on until 3 a.m. Thought it was Wednesday. Apparently it's Thursday morning. I don't like it.
Are there other shows that have like gone sour on any of you? Friends, I was never big on Friends. So like Friends, I've never really, I'm not a big Friends person.
Yeah, it would have to be something that you watched in the moment. Because like, for example, I imagine there are people who have this relationship with Seinfeld, but I watched Seinfeld on TBS reruns in the mid-2000s. So like I was never sick of it in the way that like, in the way in which you're describing it, which is, you liked this popular thing and then you became sick of it because it's such a part of monoculture now, right? Where it's just omnipresent. Everywhere you look, there's Office references, right? And people are so wed to this show.
I also feel like the people that like it now were not in on it at the beginning. And it's like, listen, like, this is my thing. Like, you passed on this. Like, I'm sorry. You can't be part of this.
Yeah, being like a TV show hipster is definitely harder now because everyone can watch everything. So there's a lot fewer hidden gems. Like I noticed on Twitter, there's a lot of people who are like Lodge 49 hipsters, and they're always like, ooh, Lodge 49, Lodge 49, Lodge 49. But
it's fun. It's a fun show.
It is a fun show.
But you're right. It's sort of the popular underbelly of, hey, it's about to get popular. Do you want to be popular by knowing the next popular thing that you should watch that'll keep your attention? Whittingham, was monoculture necessary there?
Yes, it was, Dan.
Chris Whittingham is a fancy lad.
I don't feel like it was. Roy doesn't feel like it was either. Roy is just tickled every time that sound that sound plays. It's about as happy. I don't think there's imaging, Roy, as a sound guy. I don't think there's any sound that makes you happier than Fancy Lad being undercut, his ego being sliced by happy music.
Anybody being undercut by any imaging kind of makes me laugh.
You know why I'm weird, though? I mean, there's a number of reasons, but you know one of the reasons why I'm weird in regards to TV is that if there's a show that's like really popular that everyone's talking about, I wasn't like there at the start, I can't get into it. So like Breaking Bad was one that everyone was like, Breaking Bad is like the best. I'm like, I just feel like it's not going to live up to the expectations. So I can't get into it this late. And I haven't seen it since. And I'm like, I'm okay with it. I think maybe one day I'll watch it, but I just can't get into it.
I'm jealous that you still have in your queue the ability to watch Breaking Bad.
Oh, same. That is such a good show. I felt this way when Ted Lasso came out a few months ago because everyone was talking about how amazing it was. And I was like, look, there's no way that this show is this good. Everyone keeps talking about it. I'm annoyed. I already pre-hate Ted Lasso. I'm not going to watch it. And then I finally watched it and I was like, God damn it. This show is perfect.
That happened to a lot of people. It happened to Mike Ryan. Wasn't that your experience, Mike, with Ted Lasso, where you wanted to go in and not like it because people were like, it's too syrupy sweet, but it's beautiful and we need it during the pandemic. You went in cynical.
Everyone's going to think I like this just because it's a soccer show and you're going to have to impress me if I'm going to cross this picket line and God damn it if it wasn't charming us all get out.
But it's also because we saw the commercial campaign,
yeah,
which was like, how are you turning this thing into a television show?
It was
show?
Funny, but there's no way you could make an entire
there's
show
There's no meat
out of
on
this.
That bone.
No, I know too
I
much.
I maintained that like 8 episodes into the first season.
It's the Geico Caveman show is
yeah,
what
exactly.
you were expecting.
Yeah,
100%. Like, this is such a lazy idea. This is just vintage pilot season on a streaming
Apple
service.
Apple TV is desperate.
What? I mean, this is what we're going with, and my God, it's my favorite show.
Can you guys look up for me how long that caveman, the Geico caveman TV show lasted? Because I believe we all had this bias of you can't take a lovable commercial character, and even though The Simpsons did it pretty well, and turn it into something that's large and running Apple TV. Apple has all the money in the world, and this is the show that they have had that will get people to subscribe to Apple.
I'm a little interested, and we've all made a conscious decision. Jess said that Paramount Plus isn't on there, which is the network that you are like, I'm not doing this one. I'm not crossing this line. For me, it's Stars. I'm just not getting that one. I can't do it. I want to. I'd like to have it. There's movies and a couple of shows there that interest me, but I just can't.
Stars feels like one of those things that they give you if you like have been on hold for too long. They're like, well, we'll give you Stars. And it's like,
always
take my call quicker, please.
They do that with Showtime. Always. Like, hey, I was on hold for 3 minutes. Would you like Showtime? I always say no because I have to call them to take it off.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please, at Levitard Show. Does Stars feel to you like something they give you for free because you've been on hold too long?
6 episodes for Caveman. 6. They had 13 in a can. The pilot was unaired, and the other 6 were also unaired before they canceled it after the 6th episode.
That's shocking that they made 6. Billy has seen almost no TV shows. In the chat right now, I'm just peppering him with prestige television shows. He's seen none of them. I never want to hear, Jess hasn't seen
prestige.
Point Break. Jess hasn't seen Speed. Billy has not watched The Sopranos, Mad Men,
no,
Breaking Bad,
no,
Billions,
no,
Succession,
no,
Homeland,
no,
any
no.
of these.
I saw Homeland. I was out after like 3 seasons. It was too much. I had enough. I think the problem is that the characters just were not likable enough for me to continue watching. I just kind of lost interest in their story. I was like, I get it, Carrie. Like, I can keep going with my life.
I felt that way about Girls on HBO, which is after three seasons. I'm like, I hate all of you. Why am I still watching this?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, Saul was supposed to be the likable one on Homeland, and I was just like, eh.
Mandy Patinkin, Billy, he's an incredible actor, one of the best actors of our generation on stage and behind the silver screen. On
not
the silver
my generation.
Screen? I don't know.
Why did you just do that?
Do what?
On stage and on, behind I mean, the silver he is. Screen? Like, but why did you become somebody that was all of a sudden talking in Hollywood platitudes?
I love Mandy Patinkin, Dan. He's incredible. Have you seen his TikTok?
Silver
Star
screen.
Of stage
what?
And screen.
He's got
screen,
a great
man.
TikTok.
Star of stage and screen.
What does he do on TikTok?
I don't understand why.
Chris Whittingham is a fancy
and,
lad.
And my answer for where it is that I draw the line is Disney Plus.
Disney Plus, if you have a child, it is.
You must.
It
you
is
must.
Clutch.
It is
clutch.
More essential than mother's milk. I will tell you that right now. It is so f-ing important.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
That's why they were always going to catch up. When they were ramping up for, what, 2 years because they wanted to have the rights to everything? If they have the rights to the entirety of their IP, every single parent must have that service.
Oh, my God. It is a lifesaver. My daughter's getting to that bratty stage where she just wants to cease watching a show that we put on for, you better not. After three shows, I want Dumbo. Oh, thank God, Dumbo. Thank God you exist. It's just, it's the best. She likes Bluey in that she only likes a song of Bluey. And then as soon as the song is over, and I just fast forward to the next time the Bluey song is on.
Who's Bluey?
You don't know Bluey?
No.
Oh, man. Roy, you put me on that Bluey show. It's an Australian show about a family of dogs. There's Mom, Dad, Bingo, and Bluey.
And Bluey. I've seen every episode three times because of Claire. It's actually a good show.
My daughter has the worst taste. I love Dumbo's on. It's a breeze. It's 59 minutes long. There's that weird racist part, but whatever. It's the song that everybody remembers in the film. And I didn't mean to whatever racism, but it's...
Yeah, but you did.
No, yada racism.
Can someone help me out here? Like, the crows thing, I understand, it's problematic, it's derivative, but, like, I'm watching it, I'm like, I thought it was going to be more racist. I'm like, surely the voices have to be white if this is considered, like, super racist. Disney has left the film unedited. They put one of those warnings in advance for 11 seconds that were, this film is uncut. You can't have Dumbo without the songs the crows sing. You just flatly can't. They did the live-action movie. They obviously removed the crows, but you can pull that off with a live-action movie. This is a 59-minute motion picture. The crows are essential to it. You remove the crows, it's no longer Dumbo.
Never seen Dumbo.
It's a beautiful film. Sans the problematic moral conundrum that
so
you
Mike,
get into.
So how many DVDs would you need to have if you wanted the entire library of Disney Plus for your kids?
I can't even imagine what parents did before a streaming service. Was I that picky with videotapes?
Must have been.
I just had one favorite movie that I watched over and over and over, and it was
Psycho.
Tim Allen's The Santa Claus. Close, Billy.
Yeah.
Does everyone else have a movie that's like that for them? For me, it's Angels in the Outfield. That VHS out.
There was one that I watched a lot just because my sister loved it. It was Free Willy. I watched Free Willy a ton. For me, if there was a movie, I would watch a bunch of movies over and over again, whether it was Ace Ventura, Mrs. Doubtfire on the VHS.
Dunstan Checks In.
I had that. The Sandlot was probably one that I saw the most when I was a little kid. Space Jam.
Billy, what did you watch when you were a child? Very curious about your answer.
Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. In on them early.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using SimpliSafe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with SimpliSafe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras, plus add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day, no contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system with fast protection monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Don Lebatard.
I heard the hotel industry is moving away from providing shampoo and soap.
Oh, don't get me started on them.
Yeah?
Do not get me started on hotels and the stuff
guys,
that they do.
Right, what they take from me, I feel like I'm entitled to take something from them. Thank you, Billy.
They're going to throw away the shampoo. They're going to throw away the soap. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the sheets, and I'm talking about the towels.
Stugatz.
Oh, we really care about the environment, so please hang up your towels. Get out of here. You just don't want to wash these towels because it's going to cost you money to wash these towels. All right? This whole thing about you're saving the whales or you're saving the turtles or whatever because I put my towel on a hanger. It is so full of it. All right? You just don't want to give me fresh towels every day. Just call it what it is. Tell me you don't want to give me fresh towels. I'm still going to throw it on the floor. All right? I feel like water is a renewable resource. And you're not really saving the ocean by using water to clean my towel, are you? Am I missing something? What am I missing?
Nail right on the head.
Am I missing something?
The end of the story.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Rainforest Cafe.
I love the Rainforest
Cafe. Cafe.
Overrated. You've never had Animal Kingdom. Take that back.
Overrated. Who said overrated?
It's the worst.
It's dinner and a show. You sit at the bar. Your bottom half is the bottom half of a zebra.
What show?
It's the only place that sells hard alcohol at Animal Kingdom. It's awesome. It's a bunch of
the thunderstorm, Cody. You don't like the thunderstorm?
That scared the shit out of my daughter, actually, that thunderstorm. It's just like the lowest tech... The lowest like quality of
Shut
like they're
up.
Just like it's like an elephant just barely moving its trunk.
No,
like,
no. When that snake does the jittery like move from side to side, but then it waggles its tail, you're like, wow.
It's designed in 85.
It hasn't had an update, and I love it.
Yeah. I love Rainforest.
This
Cafe.
Is the same exact place it was when I was a child. It has the same magic. And fishbowl drinks I could put a huge oversized straw in and get absolutely blasted for my foray into Animal Kingdom. When I go to Animal Kingdom, I just go to Rainforest Cafe for 3 hours so I can handle 45 minutes of the actual park.
That Cajun pasta does damage to the stomach. That food there is not good.
My daughter
I want to go to the animal restaurant. I'm like, no, we're going anywhere but there.
Have you had the honey mustard?
I don't think I have.
You got to get the sampler platter, my man. You're just ordering wrong. I'm telling you. When we were Disney employees, was one of the few places that gave employee discounts for alcohol. So Cynthia was trying
now
to piece
you're
together.
Talking my language.
Cynthia was trying to piece together. Why do you love this place so much? I'm like, I don't know. I have the greatest time, and I was just, because you got margaritas at a discount. I'm like, is that it?
Anytime I spent a dollar in Disney, I whipped out that blue card. I'm like, does this give me a discount here? A little discount.
More often than not, it would be no. But two clutch places: Rainforest Cafe and Splitsville. You got the discount. I went to Splitsville with like a party of 22 and I acted like a medieval king. People are still coming up to me and like, hey, I met you at Splitsville. I'm like, I don't remember. You were like, order whatever you want. I got it.
Did you guys ever go to the dinosaur restaurant at Disney Springs? It's like Rainforest Cafe, except it's dinosaur themed. Here's my
It has to be better. It has to be better. More lifelike.
Well, it was almost too lifelike. That's the problem. Because as you're eating, occasionally there'd just be like meteor showers while the dinosaurs are around you. And I'm like, whoa, like, let me finish my meal because I know that this is how things end for the dinosaurs. Like, I don't want to be caught up in this.
Guillermo, put these on the poll, please, at Lebatard Show. Is the Rainforest Cafe overrated? And does the Cajun pasta do damage to your stomach? At Lebatard Show. Mike, do you have the wheel of issues there? Because we got a lot of issues that we can get to, but we've got to play the wheel here so that we could just do one or two of these. Let me give the people the topics on the wheel. Can you spin it so that I can see all of them, please? So this is what we have on it. We've got a bunch of Raiders executives leaving the Raiders, and the Raiders, according to Jason Cole, this is a lot that's on the wheel here. The Raiders, according to Jason Cole, have gotten outside counsel. So it feels like something very bad is happening at the top of the Raiders, where they've got a lot of people leaving. We've got a Mike Ryan report that has made national news. We have what I believe to be one of the biggest mistakes I've ever seen in football analysis. We've got a LeBron deleted tweet. We've got a quarterback who says he can throw the football 100 yards. We've got Joey Bosa's racist girlfriend. And we got a Dolphin who was saying, I will not comply. I will not wear a mask, who's now in the COVID protocol and maybe getting all his teammates sick. So let's go ahead and just spin the wheel here. And you guys tell me where it lands because I can't see with my glasses. I don't know. What's that on? What is that on?
You want me to pick?
Well, I just can't see it from here.
I mean, you saw every detail of that Jason Cole one. It seemed like your eyes were pretty good there. It was kind of weird because that's very tiny font.
Can anyone see it from here? I can't see it.
Jess has the best eyesight here. Jess, what did it land on?
I forgot to put my contacts in this morning, Mike. I actually can't see it.
You weren't listening, were you?
I don't know which one. I don't
LeBron
know which one.
LeBron Bosa!
LeBron and Bosa? It's in between? It's between the two?
Spin it again.
Let's spin it again. It's got stuck.
The quarterback who threw 100 yards.
All right. I'm calling bullshit.
That's where it landed, or that Jalen Morton says he can throw the ball 100 yards?
Who's Jalen Morton, Dan?
He's a quarterback who says he can throw the ball 100 yards.
Quarterback for who?
Oh, I have no idea.
Well, it didn't land on that one.
What do you mean it didn't land on that one? I thought it did land on that one. One of the biggest mistakes I've ever seen in football analysis.
Hold on. I found out who Jalen Morton is. He is a quarterback now for the Indianapolis Colts. He went to Prairie View. Let me tell you something right now. If you were a quarterback that could throw 100 yards,
oh boy,
you didn't go to Prairie View. You went to a bigger school. I kind of feel like that's something the big schools would know. That there is a quarterback that can throw the football over the mountains, and the mountains aren't at Prairie View.
What if he could only learn? He only learned how to throw it 100 yards after he was recruited.
A likely story.
I just love the idea of somebody dropping back at the goal line, and you being like, "Holy shit! The pass rush held up. He just completed that ball on the other goal line. He caught that guy. He caught that guy in stride." Throwing it from one goal line to the other goal line.
Is there video? No. Or is this a Tom Brady thing that everybody fell for?
He says he can do it.
There's only one person that could do that, and that was Stephen Morris. Tell me I'm wrong.
Got a cannon.
Dude, an absolute chooch. How was he not better?
If I could throw it 100 yards, I don't think I would tell people. Because, like, after 60 yards, if you really need a Hail Mary, they're not going to keep defending your players. They're going to be like, there's no way the quarterback can throw it 80, 90, 100 yards. So they'll just let you free running around back there in the end zone. I wouldn't tell people. I'd let them see it. Like, oh, my God, he just completed a 98-yard pass from end zone to end zone.
How good of a offensive line do you need to have to be able to get your wide receivers to run 100 yards in the time that it takes you to throw the ball down to the opposite end zone?
So imagine that, like, Josh Morton is playing with Tyreek Hill. He'd need to, like, Jalen Morton, excuse me, getting 90 yards down the field, what, like 9, 10 seconds? So that's that's about what you would need. Now, it says here in the story from the Indianapolis Star that Morton says he's done it multiple times and has enough confidence in the trick that he put it in his Prairie View A&M biography.
Wow.
Who is the quarterback that you guys look at and say, maybe, possibly, kind of, almost, I can imagine that quarterback, anytime in history, really, throwing a football 100 yards?
Stephen Morris.
Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, Jamarcus Russell got drafted, basically, because we saw him doing it in the Sugar Bowl once.
And also from his knees in a practice session once.
Well, if Kyle Buller could stand up on both legs, the best pass I've ever seen Kyle Buller throw was him on one knee from the midfield.
Because Brian Billick told us that he could throw the ball into the end zone
and
from
a
knee.
In the NFL, they need to touch you when you go down on a knee, unless they have the new rules, the quarterback safety rules. Like, he should have just thrown his entire career from that position.
Not surprising that Mike Ryan would select an old UM quarterback as a guy who could throw the ball 100 yards, but Mike Ryan is angling, Dookie. You're the sixth-ranked international football expert. Mike Ryan is angling for a college football expertise. I don't know what Mike Ryan's reaction was to headlines that spread across the internet that if Notre Dame doesn't join the ACC, UM might go to the Big Ten, according to Mike Ryan Ruiz of the Dan Levitard Show.
I love that, because that is flimsy. It shows you the power of a graphics department, because I basically said everything's on the table right now in college football. That's not a major revelation. I'm like, if the ACC continues to lag behind, because actually the revenue is actually quite bad. ACC hasn't done a good job. They've negotiated some very bad deals. But Miami's pretty excited about the new leadership in there. We'll see. But if the ACC, it stands to reason, if they're getting lapped by the SEC and the Pac-12 decides to be more aggressive and the Big Ten decides
Not the most
aggressive,
important question here. Why are you being quoted as someone who is making headlines as if you're a conference mover and shaker?
Hold up. Like, I've had really good information when it comes
to
the
University
of Miami.
You have good sources, but this is why I'm asking you. Do you want the lane of legitimate insider? Because you do have good sources, but you are laughing like me at a headline that reads,
thing I've ever had
to Mike Ryan. Yeah. Okay, like your name was in the headline.
Yeah, because that's the most flimsy thing I've ever had. And these are discussions. I don't know if the Big Ten has indeed made an official overture. No. What I said was it's a real possibility. I'm not backpedaling from this. If anything, I've had
double down. Double down.
I've had to reinforce since.
Can you stop for just a second? I love as a device. Chris Cody breaking into song with a word or two.
Dan, Mike literally made us edit out part of his proclamation the other morning to protect his quote-unquote sources.
Yeah, I protect my sources.
Which one is it, though? Do you want to be serious sports analyst guy, or do you want to be guy who becomes information guy that we can mock with Chris Cody singing through a mask, a musical of backpedaling?
I think I want to be where I was sort of at prior to being aggregated with a graphic, which is like, hey, Miami's got some legitimate problems with COVID, and then like 10 days later you find out Derek King has it. Like, that's a space that I want to operate in.
You don't want any of the responsibility of being an insider, but you want to be looked at as an insider because you do have actual sources and talk to people, but you don't want Chris Cody singing.
Right. When I go out there, with Miami Hurricanes or Miami Heat stuff, it's because I feel pretty good about it, but I don't want to come off as a reporter because that's not the way my relationships are. The best, juiciest shit that I have, I will never say because I like having access to information. I feel like college football realignment
that's
is
all
fair
reporters,
game.
Though, Mike. That's Stephen A. Smith.
Is not all reporters. I know what, like, reporters will go out there with everything. I keep my mouth shut on stuff.
Yeah, Dan, what do you know about reporting?
I've got so much on this program that I don't say.
But I believe that's every good reporter's relationship with a team is you are being discerning about. I think I've heard Stephen A. Smith say that he shares like 5% of what he actually knows.
Yeah. So here's my lesson for the audience that's aggregating me right now. Don't do that.
Oh, Lord.
Because as soon as I saw that graphic out there, I was like, shit, now this, I basically need them to be either in the leaders or legends division by next year. And then I realized none of this shit matters. None of it matters. There was a report for 5 minutes that FSU and Clemson made overtures to the SEC. And then 5 minutes later, there was a staunch denial. And we're just throwing shade on the denial.
Covering his ass.
Nothing matters.
I'm kind of with Mike. I feel like we should just do more of this around here. This is what every other radio show does, right? You just kind of make shit up and get aggregated.
The Big Ten.
Alabama's leaving the SEC.
Oh, you can't do that. Come on.
According to your sources? Who are your sources, Billy?
My sources tell me Alabama's leaving the SEC. Joining the Sun Belt.
Your sources on the Marlins? your Marlins sources?
Reveal my sources, Dan. You don't understand how journalism works.
But you have to have some actual credibility. There has to be a morsel of credibility for the sources to mean anything, correct? Because Mike Ryan does talk to people. His His love of the University of Miami makes him a profound homer, but also someone who people talk to, who's around the program, who's getting in the nooks and crannies and getting these little bits of information, much of which he does not share because he does not want the responsibility that comes with his name and headlines.
And now I've moved into the very gross territory of also being a booster for the program. So now I'm getting the good shit.
Does that mean you're a booster for the program?
You're looking.
Season ticket holder.
No. It's not just that. You are looking at a tried and true golden cane.
Oh, my God.
What does that even mean?
Oh, my God.
I'm in the same tier as Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Kind of hurts your reporting, no?
No. If anything, yeah. You know.
That's true.
Conflict. Just tell this guy anything. He'll give us more money.
Oh, that's true. I never thought about it. Never thought about it that way.
Such a homer. What is your reporting going to be?
How's a golden hurricane?
I'm a golden cane.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. At Let Retard Show.
That's Tulsa. Tulsa is the golden hurricane.
Well, we're a little upset about that, the program, and we've hit him with a cease and desist.
How are they a singular hurricane?
How does Oklahoma even get hurricanes?
How can a hurricane be golden?
We're one bad storm away from needing to change the name, right?
Yeah.
PC.
Yeah, when I moved down here, I was talking to someone and I was like, so are you guys like worried about hurricanes? And they're like, oh yeah, we love the Canes. And I was like, no, I mean, what do I do when there's a hurricane?
They're more worried about the hurricane.
Billy, you say we're one storm from having to change the name, but I don't know that the Miami Herald has ever written a more unpopular column than the one Linda Robertson wrote after Hurricane Andrew, when Kendall and Homestead got wrecked by a hurricane, and she wrote "Change the Name," and people were like, "What are you talking about?" That was the only Cat 5, I think.
Shouting it from their destroyed house. Their destroyed house.
Let me tell you something. My house could be floating away with me on it, and if I see that article in progress, despite my power being out, I will throw a fist in the air and be like, screw you, we're not changing this name for anybody.
As Miami gets, because we are headed, I'm so scared of, I've never been scared of hurricanes in my entire life living in South Florida. But with all of the climate change and unprecedented storms ending up in the sea a lot earlier than they ever have and places being on fire, I am terrified of what's going to happen to the studio in this area if one of these big things hits here. And I think you're saying that from the privilege of not actually being floating away on something and knowing how horrible what might be headed here.
I live in Kendall. Kendall got nuked by Andrew. Nuked. There are plots of land that still have nothing but dead trees dating back to 1992. You drive down to Zoo Miami, you still see pieces of earth that remain untouched because of what Andrew did. We're not changing the goddamn name.
That's what it is. Billy, you asked a question.
Unless the Big Ten wants to cut us a nice little deal, because I think it's going to cost us in the neighborhood.
I like Daniel Snyder right now.
$50 to $100 million to get out of this thing. I have a basketball court of my own.
I thought it's you were got a golden hurricane. Cane. I thought you just defined what it is to be a golden cane. My home is underwater.
Yeah.
I'm underwater. My family is in peril. You will not change the name of the glory days that I have to go back 20 years to find.
Yeah, and can we get some new linebackers?
Hey, listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit. And that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
Risk reward of going into the woods by yourself. You die, or you see some trees.
I'm not going to die to go see some trees.
Stugatz.
Listen to me. You've seen one tree, you've seen them all, okay? There's no special trees out there.
That's not true at all.
That is absolutely not true.
I feel like it's true.
There's no special trees.
This is nonsense.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
I wanted to talk to Rachel because of her book, What is a Girl Worth? My story of breaking the silence and exposing the truth about Larry Nassar and USA Gymnastics. You're talking about a woman in Rachel Denhollander who is at the center, really, of a record-setting $500 million settlement with Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics. And I wanted to talk to her about the culture of gymnastics and how all of this happened. So thank you, Rachel, for joining us. How difficult, I don't even know if this is too broad a question, how difficult was it for you to write that book?
Oh, it was incredibly difficult. In fact, for a long time I said I wasn't going to do it, but it kind of got to the point where I felt like the things that needed to be said, the benefit of them outweighed the great cost that was going to come with putting those things into words.
And so when you wrote the book and when you put that out there, how much, and instantaneously, before it became a movement and one of the great scandals we've ever seen across sports, how long was the period of discomfort afterward where you had come after USA Gymnastics in a way that was viewed as some sort of betrayal because of the culture of gymnastics?
You know, I would love to say that there was a period and that ended, but to a very large degree, it hasn't. Now, if you look at the behavior of USAG's athlete representative this week, if you look at the behavior of some of their former officers, some of their current judges, it's been absolutely vile. And the continued characterization of survivors and advocates has been your bitter, angry people who are just out to ruin the sport. I wish I could say that the narrative has changed, but it really hasn't. USAG is still treating this like a publicity problem, not an abuse problem. And they're still treating us like the problem.
So you're viewed as a traitor from within this community.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, that's not abnormal for sexual assault victims. That's actually the norm. Whistleblowers and advocates who speak up are usually viewed as betraying the community, when in reality, they're desperately trying to save the community and the people who are in it.
How can that be, and how disappointing is that to you, given that I'm guessing that you feel dehumanized from within this, that it can still be so after you've exposed somebody that all of us outside of USA Gymnastics are and Michigan State are saying, how could any of this been tolerated?
You know, the answer to that really comes down to what we culture, you know, our culture and what we prioritize. And that's the same reality for any institution that turns on survivors like this. You know, whether we're talking about religious institutions, sports institutions, physical communities, your alma mater, your political party, it is a consistent pattern that when survivors and advocates speak up against corruption in their own party, they're viewed as betraying the party, betraying the institution, betraying the community. And that's because more often than not in our community, we value something else other than the truth, something else other than doing what is right. Maybe that's a political goal, maybe it's an athletic goal, maybe it's a religious goal, but something else matters more than the truth and what's right. And we're still seeing that with USAG. Something else matters more than the safety of their athletes, namely money and medals.
Rachel, are you made to feel like you broke away from a cult?
Yeah, I don't know that I define it as a cult just because that has significant religious overtones to it, but an insular community, absolutely. A community that has required complete subservience to their structures, absolutely. You know, and I think that's what's important to recognize with USAG is we're not talking about one bad doctor. We're not talking about one bad apple. We're talking about a culture that was so rife with physical, sexual, and emotional abuse of its athletes, from its top coaches and leaders all the way down to its physician, all the way down to its club-level gymnasts. USAG has been infested and run by an abusive culture, really during its entire existence. It has shaped our entire understanding of the sport and healthy coaching practices and what it means to be involved in the sport of gymnastics. So as much as USAG really wants to paint this like it's one bad doctor, it's one bad apple, the reality is that the sport is infested and built on a framework of abuse.
How has it changed since your book and since this movement and since the public shaming of the team doctor?
And change has been very slow to come. I think we have seen, to a degree, some change. And the fact that Simone Biles had the ability over this Olympics to say, this is not safe for me to do, and to walk out with a coach who was supportive, that's an incredible change. That's something that we've been fighting for, the right of athletes to have autonomy over their own bodies and prioritizing the health and safety of our athletes above anything else. That's an incredible change. That being said, we still have many, many coaches in USAG who are very abusive. We have leaders who have been part of the old system. We have current and former leaders and athlete representatives who are literally pining away for the old system, who looked at the fact that Simone exercised autonomy over her body, and then an athlete representative who wished for the good old days of Marta Caroli. You know, an incredibly abusive structure. Our athletes were so systematically starved in USAG that when they were at the Olympics and world competitions, they actually would go through the hotel looking for food that was thrown out on food service trays to eat. That's how bad our athletes, our elite athletes, were abused under Bella and Marta Caroli. So to have the athlete representative pining away for that system and talking about his respect for Marta Caroli, that's a massive signal right there that the understanding of abuse has not changed. The desire to recognize abuse and to stop abuse hasn't changed, and that leaves all of our athletes at risk.
I've never understood the Caroli dynamic. I've never understood that Marta Caroli, as you mentioned, is still out here advocating for this abusive thing that she would file under discipline as working, correct? As being successful, because look at how successful our gymnasts are.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's not just Bella and Marta that still defend that old system. It's, like I said, USAG's current athlete representative, the one that athletes are supposed to be able to go to with concerns, is defending the old system and talking about his respect for Marta and how it was better under that system. You have judges who have been mocking our athletes and again, pining away for the old system, expressing words of support for some of the most abusive coaches in the USAG system. These are USAG-certified judges that these girls have to compete under. And they're mocking these athletes and pining away for some of the most abusive coaches in the system, not just Bella and Marta, but the reality is that most of our elite coaches are known abusers and have been known abusers for decades. It's not just Bella and Marta. It is an entire system that was built on abusive framework.
Can you give us other examples, other details of the abuse extremes you're talking about beyond the sexual? When you mention starved literally and taking food off of hotel trays, can you take us through what this abuse looks like and feels like?
So, you know, the amount of control that a coach exhibits over an athlete is extreme. This is the same whether it's a low-level gymnast or an elite athlete. So I grew up in Michigan, and one of the most prominent gyms in Michigan was a gym called Twistars. It was coached by John Gettert, and I didn't train under John. But gymnastics is an insular community, and all of us knew how abusive John was. All of us did. We all knew that his athletes weren't allowed to go out to dinner after meets and that they were afraid to eat in front of him, that he restricted their food so severely that they were dramatically underweight and that eating disorders were a significant problem. Eating disorders are a significant problem in gymnastics from the lowest levels all the way up to elite athletes. In fact, there's a current coach at USAG who still owns one of the gyms, one of USAG's most prominent gyms, and he had athletes, an athlete who died of her anorexia. He had another athlete who broke her neck training a vault that she wasn't prepared to train, and she also died. So when you have that level of control over your athletes, where you are able to dictate absolutely everything they eat and everything that they can do, it's an incredibly unhealthy, abusive system. And it was to the point that, you know, when these girls would go to competitions, their coaches would search their gym bags to make sure they didn't have a granola bar. The girls were literally searched to make sure that they weren't bringing food into their hotel rooms or into these complexes. Some of them would have to have family members sneak or mail food and hope the packages wouldn't get searched. Some of them would go through the halls and look for food that was left out on food service trays because they were starving in this system. And that's just one example of a type of abuse that was rampant in USAG, the systematic starvation of our athletes and the absolute control over everything. You know, the fact that you could search a child's gym bag to make sure they don't have a granola bar and then also search an adult's gym bag to make sure they don't have a granola bar should indicate to us the amount of abusive control that USAG had over their athletes from the top down.
Can you explain to me how difficult it is for a young girl during her formative years to come up through this culture and be a fully functioning, normal, however it is you do those definitions, adult, given the amount of scarring that happens during the formative years in the specifics of this culture?
The abuse follows forever. Absolutely forever. Because when you're subjected to this level of abuse at a young age, what it really does is it entirely reshapes your perception of reality and normalcy. Because everybody around you is telling you this kind of behavior is normal. It's normal to be starved. It's normal to have constant chronic injuries. It's normal when you have an injury to be told, well, you think you're hurting, but you're not actually hurting. You're just being weak. It's normal to be belittled and told that you're worthless and you have no value and you're never going to amount to anything. Your entire perception of what is normal and healthy is completely warped and skewed. And now what we now know with our understanding of the neurobiology of trauma is that especially when that happens in the formative years, that actually rewires how the brain and the body work. It rewires our neural connection. It rewires our normal chemical responses so that things that should feel safe and should elicit chemical responses that calm our bodies down and that invoke those feelings of safety and security, those responses don't work anymore. And the responses, like when our body releases cortisol and adrenaline in response to fear, those types of body responses start happening way more than they should, which leaves gymnasts, any kind of abuse survivor, in a state of hypervigilance, often with anxiety and depression issues because the chemicals that control our emotions are so radically off balance. It results often in a cascade of other physical ailments, digestive and heart problems and autoimmune issues because of the constant stress of the body's organs being flooded with cortisol and adrenaline. And your brain works completely differently, because all of the neural connections that are supposed to form in response to a normal, healthy environment form in response to abusive environment. It literally changes everything about you.
From that angle, you must have a unique perspective on all things Simone Biles related over the last month, given that she's the only member of the team to be a Nassar survivor that we know of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to be really careful not to speak for Simone because her story is her own and only she knows fully what's going on right now. But in general understanding of trauma, all of those things are accurate. You know, and one thing that we also know with trauma is that when you have events or circumstances or sometimes even physical things, sights or sounds or smells that are related to your trauma, oftentimes that can actually trigger those trauma responses to kick up even higher. So for a lot of survivors, the Olympics are a very triggering event, not just because gymnastics is at center stage, but because it was during the Olympics that the first IndyStar article came out about the rampant sexual abuse of coaches in USAG. And that is what kicked off the Nassar investigation. That's what prompted me to come forward. It was only a couple of weeks after the Olympics that the first article ran about how Larry was a sexual abuser. It was just before the Olympics at the end of July that Simone was being brought around by Steve Penny and doing all kinds of appearances for him, literally while the FBI was investigating the sexual abuse complaints that they had received. USAG never told Simone, even though they knew she was a victim. And so they hid it from her and they gaslit her. And they used her. They commodified her. And all of those things happen right around this time of year, end of July, beginning of August. So for a lot of survivors, those types of associations really kick those trauma responses back into gear because, again, you're triggering those neural pathways that formed in response to abusive environments and abusive trauma.
Rachel, are you surprised that more hasn't changed with your book and with your voice? Are you surprised that the culture continues to make you feel traitorous as opposed to somebody who is leading a worthy cause on behalf of taking care of your body?
You know, again, I wish I could say I was, but I'm really not. Because what I and these other survivors are experiencing on a national level is what sexual assault survivors experience all over the world, even on a microcosm level. Having your community, the community of the abuser and the community that you were in, turn on you is the norm, not the exception. Having them continue to believe that you've made it up or you're in it for attention or the only reason you keep talking about these things is because you're angry and you're bitter and you hate everybody, that's the norm. That's not the exception. And so I have to say that everything I've been through over the last 5 years, I anticipated, I expected would happen. Because this is what happens to sexual assault survivors who dare to speak up. That's why I came forward so publicly. That's why I came out the way I came out, because I knew that this would be the community response. I wish it was different. I wish with everything in me it was changing faster, because our children deserve that, but I'm not surprised.
Did you get any relief from the writing of the book, or did your life get immediately and exponentially harder upon whatever that relief was, if there was any?
Yeah, there is an amount to which it always helps to process things, to put it down, because it forces you to put words to concepts that maybe you don't want to face. And so I do think writing or finding some form of self-expression in general is really helpful. I would never choose to do it for a public audience. I just wouldn't. I believe that the benefits of the book outweigh the significant cost to me and my family of putting it out there, but I wouldn't do it for myself. I would have never done it for any benefit that I get from it, because it's not enough.
So your life's gotten harder, a good deal harder.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is worth it, but absolutely.
And you knew you were choosing that?
I did.
And you're saying it's a worthy cause, but I can see how, I mean, I can see just in the way that you talk about this, that every time you're talking about it, in some ways you're reliving all of this. And it must be a draining burden to have this be so much a part of your public identity.
It is. It is an exhausting place to be. And it really puts your abuse and it puts your identity on display for the world. And I think that's one of the difficulties for every survivor who dares to raise their voices. It does mean that your status as somebody who is victimized becomes part of your identity forever. Now, I think there are really redemptive things that can come from that, of helping survivors find their voice and knowing they're not alone and being able to educate and hopefully make change. And for myself, my motivation is just to do the very best I can with what I have, to be faithful with what I'm given, and to be able to go to bed every night and know that, to the best of my ability, I have been faithful to do what is right, no matter the cost. It is worth it, but it does come at a very high cost. And that's why when I hear society responding to survivors who speak up with, oh, she's just in it for the attention. What kind of attention? Who wants this kind of attention? She's in it for the fame. Nobody wants to be famous for their, for what was done to them. It fails to understand the incredible cost to survivors of continuing to speak up, and why we so desperately need advocates who aren't part of the survivor community, who can help carry that weight, because it is a very heavy weight for someone to be struggling to heal from their own abuse and yet carrying the weight of all the change on top of it.
If the Nassar details don't change the culture of USA Gymnastics, what does?
I don't think anything does. I think the organization needs to be decertified and raised to the ground and brought back up with individuals who are trustworthy and who have a radically different approach and understanding to healthy athletics and to child protection. I don't think it does change.
And do you think that's possible?
It's really difficult because the USOPC is who certifies USAG, and the USOPC is rotten to the core as well. The USOPC has allowed sexual and physical and emotional abuse of its athletes across all of the Olympic sports, literally for decades. In order for the USOPC to act against USAG, they would have to admit their own complicity and assistance in creating these types of structures, and they don't want to do that. Again, no one is willing to do what is right because it costs too much. They don't want the cost associated of doing what is right. So ultimately, if the USAG is not going to act, and USOPC is not going to act, the only alternative after that, the only recourse, is the United States Senate, because the USOPC is a creation of the Senate and it's funded by the Senate. And I think that's where, if anything is going to happen, ultimately that's where it's going to have to happen, because these organizations are too self-absorbed and too invested in their own interests to be trusted to do the right thing. And they've just demonstrated that over and over and over again over decades.
How are you not screaming with hopelessness, given everything you've just laid out?
I'll be honest. My focus is not on a particular end goal. My focus is on faithfulness, and it has to be, to not be completely exhausted and discouraged by the lack of improvements that we've seen over the last 5 years, not just even in USAG, but in law enforcement, how we investigate and prosecute these kinds of crimes. Your focus really has to be on being faithful to what you've been given, because that's all any of us can do. No one person can single-handedly change all of these dynamics. There are too many things outside of my control. to be able to make that my focus, but I can do the very best I can do. I can be as faithful as I can be to do what is right with the platform that I have and with the voice that I have. And that's a choice all of us can make, because all of us have a circle of influence. You know, we all have our social media platforms. We all have our physical communities or our religious communities or our athletic communities. We all have places where we can use our voice. We have places where we can speak up and push back against abusive cultures. We all have mechanisms that we can employ to help change the culture and to push for reform. And my hope is that we'll start taking the power that each of us have more seriously and really focusing on being as faithful to do what is right as we can be with the platform that we have, however great or small that may be.
Rachel, thank you for your time and your work.
Thank you.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. Plus, add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. No contracts to worry about and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Hey listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit, and that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.